Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week's edition of Rewind, your week in review. Governor Tony Evers wants $251 million in higher tax collections to go to schools, but Republicans have different ideas. There's no deal yet, but leaders of both parties say help for struggling farmers will soon pass.
All the data is against what you're doing.
We preview what assembly members will be arguing about next week, criminal justice reform. Reports of a hostile work environment force out two top Democratic National Convention planners 5 months before the Milwaukee event. All that and WisPolitics stock picks on the February 7 edition of Rewind, your week in review.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., we've got more than 50 years in the Capitol, you and I, collectively. Mm-hmm. So we have seen this movie. January, Fiscal Bureau says, oh, there's $800 million more in excess. I'm sorry, the surplus is $800 million more in tax collections.
Yep.
$400 million of it has to go to the stabilization fund.
Yep.
Right? So that's going to take that total to $1 billion. So in an election year, finish the story. What happens?
In a normal election year, something happens. In this election year, I'm not sure. And why I say that is everybody has a plan to spend the money,
yes,
but nobody has an agreement on how to spend the money.
Right.
So let's look. Now, let's not forget. So not only is it $451.9 million, that's, again, estimated, projected. Let's mm-hmm. be honest. It's not there yet.
By July 1 of 2021.
To be there. There also is this pot of money in the budget for Foxconn. The tax credits for Foxconn, remember, it's basically a state subsidy of the
yep.
Foxconn payroll.
Yep.
It was budgeted to be $212 million in the second year of this biennium. Fiscal Bureau says it actually be more like $50 to $75 million.
Yes.
Which is an indication of the slow hiring process for Foxconn. That's a whole other story,
yeah,
another episode. So we could be talking more like $550 million to play with.
Potentially.
All right?
Right. So.
So we already have on the floor packages for homelessness, water bills coming out of the assembly, adoption bills out of the assembly. We have all these farm bills the governor talked about, say, the state. All these things are like, you know, I would say nickel and dimes because they're $5 million here, $10 million here, right, the big picture. Well, now we've got real money to play with.
Yep. So?
So we have Scott Fitzgerald been talking about a property tax cut since end of last year.
Yep.
Senator leader. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has talked about we want to do a tax cut of some sort. Now Governor Evers says I want to put money into education, and part of it would be a property tax cut.
Okay, and now let's go to what the Governor Evers said yesterday, followed by Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald. So before we get into some details, let's listen to what the Governor and Mr. Fitzgerald said yesterday.
Republicans in the legislature have indicated that they want to spend some of this surplus on reducing property taxes. And this may come as a surprise to you. I'd like to use some of that to invest in our kids. The proposal I'm announcing today will invest $250 million, which includes increased funding for school-based mental health services and special education aid.
I met with the speaker yesterday, and we are focused still on a package of significant tax cuts in trying to return some of the excess revenue that it looks like we're going to be able to capture in the state back to taxpayers. So, if he's trying to anticipate the next budget, I guess I understand what his argument is, but I don't see the caucuses going in that direction.
Let's consider a couple specifics and what the governor would like. And mm-hmm. he's called a special session. It's his third. Remember, guns didn't go anywhere. Farm aid, we'll talk about in a minute, and now special session on how to use the surplus. He wants to boost K-12 aides by $130 million, saying this would get them back to the two-thirds that's been a target on again, off again.
It's also his property tax cut, right? Because remember,
that's true.
We have revenue limits on schools. It's yeah. a mix of how much you spend from property tax and state aid. This is the second year of the biennium. When you put state aid into that formula and keep the revenue limit per pupil the same, it drives on property taxes. So that's his tax cut in this package.
And yes, saying that it would reduce the need of school districts to go to referendums.
Yeah.
Referendums, I think, that have totaled $3 billion in the last 5 years. Then he wants $79 million more for special ed, which is a huge issue with him as a former superintendent of public instruction.
They pared it back from $600 million to $97 or $98 million in the budget.
Yes.
Republicans did.
Okay. Now, we heard from Senator Fitzgerald, but then he put out this tweet. And let's just look at that a minute. Senate Republicans have been focused since late last year on using our surplus for a tax cut for hardworking families. And the governor knows that. Last sentence, it appears that the teachers' unions are the ones calling all the shots in the East Wing. So how do you think this is going to play out? There will be a tax cut.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Are you saying the governor may veto a second tax cut?
Okay, so what's this cut going to look like? You know, first off, let's start with the Senate Republican caucus. When I've been making calls in the past week or two about that caucus, they're over the map about what they want to do with the money. There are factions who want to do a property tax cut, income tax cut. There's talk about, well, people in rural Wisconsin want to talk about roads, other issues. Here's the thing about property tax cuts. What the state basically does is when it wants to do a property tax cut, it drives state aid into these formulas for local governments.
Yes.
Drives down the reliance of local governments on property taxes because state aid is filling the overall spending balloon.
And then it says, local governments, thou shalt not raise the property tax.
Here's a problem with that, though. Republicans, some of them learned a lesson for 2014. Remember what happened in 2014? Big pot of money, and Scott Walker, Republican, said, we're going to buy down the property tax levy for tech colleges. They took $400 million, I think, in change, put in that formula. That basically drove down property taxes that the tech colleges use to fund their operations. They also redid the withholding tables to put money in paychecks right away.
Yep.
What the lesson was from that, though, is that voters don't see that property tax cut until after the November election. You don't get credit until then. And two Republicans have told me, that some of them at least, that they feel like even when they drive down property taxes for the state aid going in, locals then can raise them, and it's a never-ending cycle of buying them down when they go up from the locals to raise stuff.
Okay, so then is another strategy, and we cut the income tax, and we tell the Department of Revenue to cut the withholding tables so people see it immediately in their paychecks?
So what's the income tax going to look like? Can they agree on an income tax cut? When I say they, the Republican caucuses, then would Evers sign it? Or would Evers say, no, this is not what I want. We have to have some kind of compromise. Again, they don't hold all the cards anymore. Evers has to be part of this conversation, or at least have some input. So do they get Evers to buy in? Maybe. Then could you also buy down debt? Now, here's the thing about buying down debt. We've heard that phrase before, right?
Yes.
Money is cheap right now. So if you buy down debt when money is cheap, maybe it's not the best use of the money. So what I'm trying to get across is there are all these ideas right now. We are in the sausage-making process at the end of the session. And yeah, I can see a deal getting done, but there's no guarantee right now they can agree on something because look at the last 13 months. What have they agreed on big picture in the last 13 months in the Capitol?
Okay, that's fair. But I want to go back to something as we end this topic. You don't think we're going to end this session with a tax cut? I do.
Possibly. But can you get the Senate Republicans to buy what the Assembly Republicans want to do and vice versa? There's no guarantee on that yet.
Well, okay. If I were a betting man, I'd bet that the Republicans line up. But then if it's on Evers' desk, what does he do? He already vetoed one tax cut.
Let's review what we've seen before in our history, right?
Quickly.
2000, a rebate check back to voters.
Yes.
We've seen 2014, the property tax buy down, the withholding tables change. I mean, like, there's been all kinds of ideas floated out there over the years.
Okay, but the point is, when we have projections of a higher surplus, tax cut fever takes in the Capitol.
And guess what? If you're Evers and you don't agree with the tax cut, guess what happens with that extra money? It rolls over to the next budget, and you get to spend it, and you're at least in your proposal, not guaranteed it's going to happen, but putting your proposal to boost education in 2021 to 23.
Election year, there'll be a tax cut. Okay, new subject. Now, what they did agree on last week seemed to be we all want to help farmers. So let's hear from a couple of our leaders just on the subject of what I'm calling farm aid. Please.
We know Wisconsin farmers are facing difficulties for a variety of reasons. Today we're announcing what our agricultural priorities are going to be for the remainder of the session. It includes bills that are working their way through the process, some that are just being recently introduced, others that were introduced earlier in the session. And our goal is to provide both short-term relief and long-term relief because we know Wisconsin farmers need help now. One of the things that we're looking at would be a proposal to allow those smaller family farms to be able to deduct the cost of their health insurance to save money on their income tax bill and also provide high-quality health care for themselves and hopefully a small employee or number of employees in a small operation.
I'm glad all sides now have decided to get going on this particular issue. It's obviously an important one, and we have an opportunity in a relatively short period of time to make a difference. Whether it's tax credits or if it's tax and income tax credits, that kind of money is always deferred, and I think people need help now. And so I would prefer to look at issues that that are more immediate than that. But I'm open. I mean, good gosh, we're in a position now where people care about this in a way that they're willing to move forward on something. So I'm happy about the ideas. Let's get them on the table and figure it out.
We heard Speaker Moss say we're looking at some specific tax breaks. Number one would be for family farms, a deduction for their health care costs.
Actually, it'd be all sole proprietorships.
So it'd go beyond farming and non-farming. Thanks.
So the way he explained it during the news conference, it'd go beyond just farms. About $9 million a year, I think it was the price tag.
Right, and then does he want to mess with their constitutional uniformity clause? Are we dancing around the edge of that?
So that's the property tax issue. He wants to have something that would cut property taxes for farmers, but uniformity clause, which just what it sounds like, you must treat all property uniformly. Mm-hmm. So how do you get around that and target a property tax break just for farmers?
Since ag is just one class, commercial and
Boss
residential.
Boss said they're working on
utilities.
That. They caucused on Thursday to try and get to a clearer picture.
Okay.
My call so far, there wasn't necessarily a show of hands at the end of caucus, say this is where we're going to go with this whole idea. So that's why I say, again, they might get something done. But right now, they're in this kind of the morass of the sausage-making kind of thing. Okay, what are we going
to
do?
Okay, now let's go back to what the governor said. I'm glad they're addressing this issue. I think we'll ultimately end up. But the governor is saying our tax credit's the best way. Translate what the governor said.
He wants to do what he wants to do. Come do what I want to do.
Can't get more direct than that.
What's interesting is Robin Voss said at the news conference that the bills are going to do as part of their ag package will be a mix of what bills that Republicans already had in the pipeline in the assembly, new ideas, and what the governor wanted. The people I talked this week suggested that's a sign of how the governor forced the hand of Republicans that, hey, we weren't going to do anything big and bold, to mm-hmm. use Robin's words, with this issue. All of a sudden, the governor put this in the pipeline. We got to do something now. What is it going to be?
Okay. And two more points quickly. Mr. Voss says Speaker Voss, willing to spend more than the governor on this.
Mm-hmm.
This is not an issue, especially when we have so much more money.
Just like looking, the governor's, one of his ideas is to try to get our exports of dairy products a bigger percentage of the nation's exports. Robin said what he proposed wasn't enough money basically to get that done.
Yeah.
He wants to do more.
Yeah.
Don't forget, over in the state Senate, we have a Republican caucus that want to spend money on X, Y, and Z so far outside the budget. So there is still a roadblock over there unless you get those guys on board some of these proposals.
Okay, and final point on this. When Speaker Fitzgerald says we're all ears on the issue of how to help farmers, I read that as we're going to let the Assembly lead on this issue. Fair?
Also, he said all ears on the governor's side to say. What the governor's going to talk about, we're listening to what he has to say.
Okay, new subject. There was this simple bill that would have provided for a funding way to make sure there's no more backlogs in the testing of sexual assault kits. It's a simple bill, passed the Senate, comes back to the Assembly, and the term you used earlier, sausage, stuffing mm-hmm. the sausage at the end of the session. Let's look at some of the provisions added by Assembly Republicans. A sexual assault bill of rights, a requirement that ICE be notified if undocumented persons, a person is arrested for sexual assault, and a requirement that a victim be eligible for school choice even if they do not meet the income. So we had a pretty simple principle. Let's pay for and keep a tab on sexual assault kits that are tested, keep them for 50 years or however long the statute of limitations. Explain to me the process that added these three controversies.
A couple things. Reason that this backlog built up over the years is that there's no statutory direction of what you must do with the kit once it's collected.
Yeah.
So sometimes if a victim didn't want to pursue charges, they end up on a shelf. That's part of the reason why the backlog was created. DOJ advocates want a structure in place to ensure that there are now directions of you collect a kit, this is what happens to it, so that it goes to state crime lab and doesn't sit on a shelf anymore.
The victim has to consent that there's a test. Yeah.
Two bills passed the Senate unanimously in October. One creates a framework of these directions, what happens. The second funds the database. Those bills have been hung up in the assembly and the committee level without a hearing, without any movement, despite some pressure from various corners saying, hey, let's get this done. All of a sudden, late last week, this new bill comes up. It has these provisions that are being added to it. The question is why? David Steffen, Republican from the Green Bay area, basically said during the hearing, it wasn't moving, the clock is ticking, and I had to do something to get this on, get my fellow Republicans on board in the assembly and get something done. When I made calls this week, the theme that I heard each time was this. Robin Voss is going to give Josh Call a win on something like this. Assembly Republicans can't do nothing about this, and so they've got to have something. And thirdly, you put Democrats in a difficult position, especially in swing seats, of voting against things like reporting people aren't here illegally and charges of sexual assault. Like, in a swing district, who wouldn't want to see that happen, right? So it's the three-headed monster of don't give Call the win, protect the Assembly Republicans with a vote, and put Dems through a tough one.
And there's no appropriation in this latest bill, so the governor cannot line item veto it.
Yes.
He'd have to take it all or reject it all.
And even Senate Republicans who worked on this issue I talked to this week were not happy with what's going on with this bill. They're telling me this may kill the entire effort for this session. Now, during the hearing, Joe Sanfilippo, the Assembly Health Chair, is kind of prodding Call, saying, well, why can't you guys keep track of this on your own? It's all you're backsliding on this issue.
Yep.
And Call's argument is we need this legislation to make sure those kits don't end up on a shelf.
Which is where we're going to go right now, to an exchange between the Attorney General Call and Representative Joe Sanfilippo.
What you were doing is preventing sexual assault kits from being tested. Now, if you want to have a separate hearing about immigration issues where we take those up, or about school choice issues, that is absolutely appropriate, and I think we should have those debates. But that's clearly not what's going on here. As you heard from Representative Steffen, that this legislation has the votes to pass, AB 214. It's only being killed for what appears to be a partisan purpose.
It sounds to me like we're reverting back to our old ways, that we recognized a problem, took steps to solve the problem. The problem was solved. So how did we go from testing 4,100 kits in the prior administration to now we have no idea if we have a backlog or we don't have a backlog, or where these kits are?
This is legislation that A.G. Schimmel, as you heard, was also supportive of. This has nothing to do with A.G. Schimmel and A.G. Call. This is about preventing a backlog. This should not be a partisan process. If we don't get this done, delays in getting kits tested are more likely, and that means that there will be more victims.
I agree with you 100%. This should not be a partisan issue, which is why for somebody to object to the bill because they may have a fundamental philosophical view that they don't like school choice, or that they don't agree with this country's immigration policies, should somehow be a cue for people to march up and say this bill has to be killed just because of those two things. There's no reason to not support this bill, because it has exactly what you want, but it goes a little bit farther to provide additional rights and additional protections for the victims of sexual assault.
We normally talk about issues as they occur in a week, but I want to set up a major issue on criminal justice reform that's going to be talked about a lot. I mean, it got some attention this week, but it's up in the Assembly next week. First of all, let's put it in context. The Department of Corrections says that we're going to see a 3.2% increase in the number of adult inmates within 3 years. Point one. Point two, when I go on the DOC website, Corrections website, it says that taxpayers pay $32,700 annually to house a male inmate, $37,700 for a female inmate. And by the way, let's just talk about adult male inmates. 43% of them are African Americans, according to DOC's website. So comes now Governor Evers and Democrats saying a few things. We want criminal justice reform that safely reduces the adult inmate population, increases reporting and data collection, reinvests the savings in reducing recidivism, and read our lips, no new state prison. But now, which is, I'm interested in your take, you have Republicans on both sides offering tougher on crime bills that will be debated in the Assembly next Tuesday, require corrections to revoke probation or parole if someone is charged with a crime, mandatory 6-month sentence for third offense shoplifting, mandatory 30 days in jail conviction for vehicle theft, new judicial oversight over felon in possession and car theft cases. Well, I just want to point out that this is really interesting. I just think criminal justice reform, yeah, even the president mentioned in his State of the Union mm-hmm. speech. So I'm setting up this issue as something that's going to get a lot of attention, a lot of back and forth, a lot of controversy next week, but I've done most of the talking on the issue. Your impressions?
A couple of things at play here. One, you have largely suburban Republicans talking about violent crime in Milwaukee.
Yes.
And things they want to see, which obviously they feel like their constituents don't feel safe going to Milwaukee. They know the governor's going to veto this because one of the governor's platforms he ran on for governor was to try to reduce prison population,
yes.
criminal justice reform. They're going to put Democrats through tough votes on these bills because rural Wisconsin sees Milwaukee and says there's a problem there because they don't feel safe. So this makes sense to me. So why are you, local Democrat, voting against these bills? The governor vetoes it. They put him back through maybe a veto override vote, get him on the record again. Difficult vote in election year. It's a pretty simple formula, if you ask me.
So it's the Republicans putting Democrats through some of these tough
and
votes.
And don't forget, their constituents do feel like there's a problem and they don't feel safe going to Milwaukee. Okay? But there are a lot of politics at play in what's going on.
Well, okay. We know Governor Evers and Democrats from Dane County and Milwaukee County stand with them. What about some of these rural Democrats?
That's the question.
Are they going to really be put in a bind on this?
Possibly, yes.
Okay. New subject. Last week, I didn't see this coming. I hope you have more information than I. Two senior Democratic officials planning the Democratic convention in Milwaukee, the President Liz Gilbert and Chief of Staff Adam Alonzo, were dismissed. And they were replaced by someone you probably know pretty well, Teresa.
Mm-hmm. Vilmaine, yes.
Vilmaine. She's a Wisconsin native and convention veteran. She'll manage the day-to-day operations. At issue was claims of a hostile work environment. Before I give you a chance, let's just look at how CEO Joe Salmanese talked about this, moving it forward. Every person deserves to feel safe and respected at their place of work. Claims made by employees of the Milwaukee 2020 Host Committee present an acceptable and upsetting environment. The convention is 5 months away.
Mm-hmm.
How big of a setback is this? How big of a black eye is this in a week that the Democratic National Committee can't run Iowa, can't force the president out of office?
They didn't need this PR right now. So let's separate things. One, the PR piece of this, bad timing. You know, you've got all these things, like you said, Iowa with a count by Iowa State Party, Trump hitting 49% in the Gallup poll. That could be an outlier, but
right.
still some momentum possibly. The acquittal, the victory lap, say the union speech, all things that Democrats had to sit through and not be happy about. Now you have the committee hosting your convention, having this kind of thing pop up, not great timing. Now, with the host committee, remember, the host committee is not the DNC, right? The DNC will run the show about actually nominating a presidential candidate to face Donald Trump.
Yeah.
The host committee raises the money and gets the volunteers to put on the show. This happening is obviously a setback, is not good for them. The questions are, how's the fundraising going to go from here on out? I talked to Democrats this week, said, hey, the committee feels good about its fundraising so far. The question is not, can the committee host a convention? The question at this point is, how nice a convention will it be? They're in good shape financially. There are dozens of employees over there. So losing two is not going to like kill the operation. However, again, a black eye. Then there's this other political level. And talking to people who are veterans of campaigns, they will tell you that you could almost call any campaign a hostile work environment because it's very pressure packed. These guys have to raise $70 million in a short window for this whole effort. It is not an easy job. That said, you know this business, there are rumors. If the worst the rumors are true, people tell me, then these two deserve to be fired. The problem is we don't know the rumors are true. There's an investigation going on right now. But the second this blew up, hostile work environment, all these kinds of things, there had to be some action taken. And there's also this element of, if you've been paying attention to the convention kind of scuttlebutt for the last few months, there's a faction that wasn't really necessarily happy with some people brought in to work the convention.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw a problem and saw an opportunity to kind of maybe elbow these guys aside because they didn't like their leadership style. Now, again, not trying to minimize anything that they did or didn't do or failed to do, but there's more than just like these guys messed up, end of story. There's a lot of layers of this piece, this quest story.
Okay, you've obviously been working it pretty hard. So here's my question. The next 5 months of planning, Salmanese and Teresa mm-hmm. or some new people brought in?
Yep. So Teresa was described in the news release late Tuesday night as kind of running the show in the interim. She's a veteran Democratic operative. She's a veteran of conventions. She's worked all over the place. She's well-known, respected. when you mention her name, people go, okay, we're going to be okay. Yeah. I talk to Democrats.
Okay.
The question is, does she keep on? Are they going to have somebody come in full-time and replace her? All that kind of good stuff the next few months. But again, as long as they keep hitting their fundraising marks and bringing the volunteers, it'll all come together.
Okay.
If they nominate somebody in July and everything pulls off, this will all go away. Don't forget, this is more than just a convention for Milwaukee. This is a chance for Milwaukee to prove itself on the big national stage. Say, hey, we are not the kid brother of Chicago. We are a national player. When it comes to these things, they need to pull this off.
That's why I wondered if how much damage potentially 5 months out. But anyway, okay, new subject. Historic vote in the state in the U.S. Senate. Wisconsin, I just think we should put on the record the reasons that our two senators voted the way they did. Let's start with Republican Senator Ron Johnson. He voted to acquit President Trump, and which means, of course, keep President Trump in office, saying the strength of our republic lies in the fact that more often than not, we settle our political differences at the ballot box, not on the streets or battlefield, and not through impeachment. Impeachment should be reserved for the most serious of offenses, where the risk to our democracy simply cannot wait for the voters' next decision. That was not the case here. Any PS before we read Senator Baldwin's?
I mean, the reactions from Baldwin and Johnson were expected. They had sent plenty of signals beforehand that this was going to happen, and carried out as we expected it to with them.
Okay, but I think it's important, since it was such a historical vote, let's read what Senator Baldwin said, Democratic senator. I am afraid that the majority is putting this president above the law by not convicting him of these impeachable offenses, but let's be clear, this is not an exoneration of President Trump. It is a failure to show moral courage, and hold this president accountable. Okay, moving on. Hey, two-minute drill, stock picks.
All right, so rising this week, we have Mike Gallagher and Ron Kind. Mike Gallagher, Republican Congressman from Green Bay. Ron Kind, Democrat from La Crosse. Gallagher, fundraising champ, fourth quarter for the congressional delegation with $400,000 raised, about $2 million in the bank. Ron Kind, the war chest champ. He raised about $300,000, had $3 million in the bank. Look, in looking at the landscape of congressional races this fall, maybe Kind gets a raise. So far, the four people announced aren't really showing signs that they're top-tier candidates. They haven't raised any money yet that's significant. They haven't really put it in their campaign operation. Gallagher faces Amanda Stuck, a Democratic state representative from Appleton. She's not raising much money. It's symbolic of the map in general, where you have incumbents who have serious financial advantages over their challengers. Maybe Kind gets a race, but at this point, it looks like they're both in pretty good shape.
And, okay, mixed.
So, Tom Tiffany. I've been hearing from insiders in the Capitol for months that this race is Tom Tiffany's to lose, 7th Congressional District. It's a special election to fill a seat that was held by Sean Duffy, fellow Republican, very Republican seat. Tiffany's been planning to run for this seat for some time now, waiting for the day that Duffy left, thinking it would be to run for their office, but he resigned. But the confidence has waned a little bit, and here are a couple reasons why. One, Tom Tiffany's raised more money than anybody else so far in this race, with about $720,000 at a three-week head start. Jason Church, who faces the GOP primary, his numbers came in this week, $686,000 roughly raised in a shorter window. That's not bad for a first-time candidate. Now, the question going forward, we're seeing outside spending so far, slight edge to Tiffany. Church has a compelling story to tell as a double amputee, retired Army captain, injured in Afghanistan. He's getting some national attention because of that story. Can he deliver in the next 2 weeks? Tiffany has a little more of a ground game here that may give an advantage. So it still feels like it's Tiffany's race to lose, but maybe not as much as it was like a month or two ago.
You got 20 seconds for falling.
Tom Bozlazowicz, sorry if I'm saying that incorrectly. Look, with Jim Sensenbrenner gone, there's
now, he's a Democrat running against
Dem running for 5th Congressional District. He lost to Sensenbrenner 30% of the vote 2 years ago. I thought of, okay, once this titan of the congressional delegation goes away, maybe there's a window to really have a get with this seat. Not so much. He's a 9-1 cash disadvantage to Scott Fitzgerald, Senate Majority Leader who's running for the seat as a Republican. Tom is raising more money now than he was 2 years ago, but that money pales in comparison to Fitzgerald, who raised $433,000, which is more than any incumbent in the three-month period.
Okay, a follow-up question. Weren't you tempted to name the Iowa Democratic Party and failing, my friend?
I cover Wisconsin politics.
I understand, but Governor Evers
said— That's my expertise.
But our Governor Evers says he's not a friend of caucuses.
No, he wants to see him go with a form of voter suppression, so—
Fascinating. Okay, next week, assembly and long agenda,
yes.
Criminal justice, et cetera. Do you remember other things that are on there? You had them in your newsletter.
Free speech bill
free
that Robin Voss has been pushing for a long time on UW system campuses.
Right. Okay. Okay. I'm Steve Walters.
I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for February 7.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.